Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
Let's do it!
Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Whoop, whoop! Actually, in my world, texting back and forth with my stepbrother and some friends and my dad, it's Garrett Cole Day! Boy, if you do the math, and you take a team that won 103 games. Yeah, I know Didi leaving, but I think they're suited to handle that loss at shortstop. Move some guys around. And remember, their best pitcher pitched 12 regular season innings last year, Luis Severino. So they add their best two starters to the front end of that rotation now in Garrett Cole and Sevy. They're going to be a substantial favorite to win the East, up there with Houston and Minnesota, who's actually upgraded their team off of a American League Central winning season. Not sure what to make of the Nats, the defending champs. You know, they re-upped Strassi. So Scherzer obviously stays. Probably need a new third baseman if Rendon bolts, which seems likely. But anyway, just had to get a little hot stove out of my system as we welcome you to the Wednesday edition of Sports Talk, the 5 o'clock hour. In particular, what?
There's no way Garrett Cole stays all 9 years, right? Like, the Yankees will either cut him or he'll retire or he'll opt out after the 5 years or something.
I don't think there's an opt out.
There is an opt-out after 5 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a full no-trade clause, which is also different. But, I mean, if he, like, takes a downturn after 3 years and he's looking at that five-year spot and the Yankees are like, hey, you gonna you get back to that old, like, form you had when you were 28, 29 and we gave you three-quarters of a billion or $300 million or whatever it is, three-tenths of $1 billion? Can you get back to being like that, please? That'd be great.
I always look at these new baseball deals as it's almost like forget the money, forget the years. They're throwing all that cash at him for what he's going to do in the first 4 or 5 years. And if they win a World Series and then get to another World Series, it's totally, totally worth it. Because you know how, especially in Yankee land, not having won. Actually, they play the, oh my God, they haven't won in 10 years. Like, yeah, I also remember when you went from 1979 through 1996 without winning a World Series either. So get over it. It ain't that big a deal. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yes.
Wasn't a decade, though. The decade's just, it's a completely different experience now. You almost played for a couple World Series in that time, raised some banners. Yeah, you saw the Red Sox win a couple times, but it wasn't a decade. You've gone a decade now with nothing.
Well, I'm just saying it doesn't bother me. And it never has because of what I just said. They sucked guava jelly when I was growing up. Then they had the great five-year run with Reggie where they made three series, four series, won two. Then they went from 82-95 without winning it, had the crazy run from 96-03 where they were in it every year except two. And then, you know, were a regular contender during the Jeter years, and then won it in 2009. Have been in the league championship series the last 2 years, and it's like, I've said, I just view baseball differently. I mean, man, sometimes it starts in March, and you just get through. I mean, you're 8 weeks removed from the Super Bowl, and it takes you all the way into the teeth of football season again. And if a team is winning like that, and, you know, constantly 90 games, 100 games, making playoff runs, I just can't be like, oh, it's a World Series or bust. Like, screw you. Who do you think you are, you spoiled brat? What are you, a Patriot fan? An Alabama fan?
I think that's the mentality of the younger Yankee fan, which is almost every other Yankee fan, Steve, than you.
Yeah, but so to be a younger Yankee fan and be part of the winning, which really stopped in 2000, because, you know, they only've won one since then. So how old, have lived through the 96 to 2003 dynasty, kind of had to be born in the early 80s. So it's like, and my answer remains, screw you. Nobody asked for your approval. So who was on the Yankee last championship team that's still playing? Well, don't you know, Robbie Cano, Brett Gardner, is Cervelli still in the league? Francisco Cervelli, is he still catching for the Pirates?
He can't be.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, he played last year for the Pirates and Braves. Mark, by the way, you know who was on that team? Oh, no, never mind. I clicked on the team. I was like, that seems nuts. Yeah, in 2000 and...
Mark Melanson.
I was just going to say, Mark Melanson. Isn't that funny? Who else?
That's so weird when you said Cervelli. I'm looking at the roster and I realized that he was 23. I've always thought he was 35 and playing for his 19th team.
Yeah.
I've never thought of him as being a young player in baseball. He's just like, no, he's always been the
gritty
veteran. He came
into the league.
No, it's possible. He came in at 37.
Backup. So, yeah, there you go. All right. Now let's get to what's on everybody else's mind. The departure of offensive coordinator. Ian Kennedy was on that team as well. And he is still throwing with the Royals. Although he went from being a starter, he came exclusively out of the bullpen last year, made 60 appearances, and actually had a pretty good season. All right, 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. What do you guys think about Arroyo departing for UNLV, a program that I understand a lot of people think is going to suddenly be attractive because of a new stadium and better facilities? But what has to happen is Vegas has to, in essence, become the opposite of what they've been during their entire history because they're a terrible failure of a football program. And if that sounds harsh, well, prove me wrong with statistics, not hypotheticals, about what it might become. And I would never begrudge someone an opportunity or seeking a dream to become a head coach. That's all well and good, but the bottom line is UNLV has made what? Since they became a football program as an independent in 1978, they played in a defunct California Bowl going back to the Pacific Coast Athletic Association when, you know, Nick's favorite team, San Jose State, was the conference champ that year.
City.
Then they joined the Big West, did nothing. Then near the end, they made the Las Vegas Bowl. So here's a program that went 7-5 in 1994. So in a quarter century, They had an 8-win season under John Robinson, went to the Vegas Bowl. That's it. They've had 1 7-win season, 1 8-win season, no winning, 2 winning seasons in a quarter century, and 2 bowl appearances. So you've had Icky Woods, Randall Cunningham, Keenan McCardell, 3 guys go on to have notable NFL careers. That's it. That's what they're facing. So to think that all of a sudden a coach, even a successful high-quality coach like Arroyo, is going to go there and it's going to be just add water, this is a tall order. This is a daunting task that he is facing, going to a basketball school. And, you know, at a certain point, are young guys going to be swayed by a nice news station, a stadium, or, you know, I can't imagine people are going to be like, well, I can play at Bryant Denny, the Horseshoe, or the new Vegas Stadium.
Well, the player that's looking at Ohio State isn't looking
at UNLV. I know,
UNLV.
I'm being over the top sarcastic to prove a point.
Well, okay, but it's still, I think it's even still a little too over the top. But you think about, you know, your Mountain West player, if they're thinking about, you know, go whatever random, like playing at Nevada Stadium, which has soccer and lacrosse lines painted on it, or UNLV Stadium, which is, you know, if you're a Nevada player and you're going to be like, wow, I can live in Vegas, that's very exciting. I can play in that gigantic new stadium with some of the better facilities that, you know, any Mountain West school is going to have, like, that's going to attract a couple different players.
They hope.
Well, yeah, they hope, and you get a
but
guy
that
like,
lasts for what, 2 years? And if all of a sudden they're back to 2-10 and 3-9, all of a sudden people are like, yeah, the stadium's empty, the program stinks, you could have it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, if you always look at it where the Debbie Downer team is always going to be the Debbie Downer because they've always been the Debbie Downer,
yeah,
then yes, they're forever going to be that.
So I'm just saying, I've had too many people, well, they're doing this and what, and I'm like, all right, relax. Just let's see. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, to the person who texted that Taggart's going to come back to be offensive coordinator, no, he's going to be the new coach at Florida Atlantic University. That's also a done deal. I would say forget names that you've known who've been here, around here. I think that Coach Cristobal will do exactly what he just did. He'll try and find a guy who, like Andy Avalos, on the offensive side of the ball. I can't imagine a coordinator from a major program. Even Joe Brady, the passing game coordinator from LSU, that was his first year doing that. I don't know that you want to just take for granted that he's a guy that you would even want to look at, or that he's already at this point would be willing to relocate diagonally across the country. My guess is the next Oregon offensive coordinator is a guy that not one single solitary person has even remotely thought of just yet. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, I've given away a couple of pair, but I've got a couple more to go. If anybody wants to see the Mary Poppin' Daddies, the Daddies are playing Friday night at Sessions Music Hall. Terrific venue, kick-ass band with their unique version of swing. It's a 21-plus show, so for a couple of you who are like, would I be able to bring my kids? The answer is no. Doors open at 8. Showtime is 9. This coming Friday, so you know, get to me so I can make sure you can pick up the tickets at our reception either tomorrow or Friday. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Mike. Mike, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, pretty good, Steve. Would you say that Kayvon Thibodeau might be the next Troy Polamalu if he keeps playing the way he does?
Well, Polamalu's a defensive back. Thibodeau's a defensive lineman.
But the way that he rushes the quarterback and gets to the backfield the way he does, would you say that there's a chance?
It's two different positions. I can't go along with this. I can't be party to this. And Polamalu did not really make his bones rushing the quarterback. I mean, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame because he's a safety.
Okay. Sounds good, Steve.
All right. That was an interesting comparison, don't you think? And the text I just got, the Ducks should reach out to Chris Peterson. Because a guy who walked away from a $4 million a year job is going to take a demotion for less money to be a coordinator.
Somebody called and said, let's bring back Steve Greatwood while we're bringing guys back as well. I thought that was funny. That's a different name. You don't hear about people asking to have come back.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Mike. Mike, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, good afternoon. Great, Steve. How's it going with you?
All right, what's up?
Hey, so I think even a remote chance, well, it's crazy, but Jason Garrett gets fired from the Cowboys. Kellen Moore gets fired as well. So you've got that Boise State tie, so not Chris Peterson, but Kellen Moore. Offensive coordinator for the Ducks.
Wow. First, I'd be curious to find out what kind of dough he was making in the NFL. And, because he's never worked as a coach in college because he left for Boise and went right into the NFL. So I always concerned about a guy with no experience.
Well, experience in the NFL is pretty good. I mean, where did Joe Burrow come from?
Oh, you mean Joe Brady?
Joe Brady.
Yeah, he worked a couple of years, I guess, as a what was his actual title there? Like just an offensive assistant with the Saints?
Exactly, and no college experience whatsoever. So
no, it's at least it's unique. I give you that much.
Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy. Wow, you guys are just unyielding. Somebody, maybe Jonathan Smith wants an upgrade. Jeez. How about this one? Mark Sanchez.
Oh, wow. Can we run the butt fumble play?
On two. For one for each cheek.
You would have to ask him about that, right? Like, if we go to media day, you're like, okay, who do you want to talk to? We can talk to Cristobal. We'll talk to Penei Sewell. We'll talk to Javon Holland again. We'd like to talk to Mark Sanchez, but I'm going to strictly ask him about the butt fumble. What was the play call? What happened during the play? What did it feel like when you ran into the butt of that player? Who is the player that Mark Sanchez ran into in butt fumble? Who is the butt of the butt fumble?
A couple people have mentioned Bill Musgrave, which is just ridiculous. I mean, he was a coordinator and tight end coach for 2 years in college at UVA. I think he worked for Al Groh before Groh became the Jets head coach in 2001, 2002. Then he's with Jacksonville, then Washington, then Atlanta, then Minnesota, then Philly, then Oakland, and then Denver. And he is not currently employed. And again, you're going to make a guy who has not been coaching at the collegiate level for the better part of two decades the offensive coordinator. It doesn't seem very realistic. And remember, it's just when, and I get that some have been able to cross over successfully, but what I wonder what the frequency is, because when you've been an NFL guy, you don't have to worry about recruiting. You just, in essence, just are like, here's your guys. You coach, you watch film, you break it down, you try to implement your scheme. You know, you take a lead or two from the head coach. It's not logical. It doesn't make sense. Somebody says they've got it all figured out, that Scott Frost and Chip Kelly are going to come back and be offensive coordinators.
That would work too. That would be interesting. But the thing, even if you're a coordinator in the NFL, like, you still have to have some say in the type of player that's coming in, right? You're not literally just like, I'm the OC, I'm stuck on the practice field. I guess I'll work with who's out here. You know, you probably don't have as much say to be able to tell the head coach or a GM or an owner to be like, hey, we should go after this guy, because, you know, you do get into potential tampering is only if you say it publicly to the media, I think. But, like, you still have a say in the kind of type of players you want to go after. It's just you don't have the the complete freedomness or somewhat freedomness that recruiting brings, right? As a coach. Right. So I just think, you know, you're working with the experience in the NFL and you're able to say, hey, this, you know, we're gonna, the NFL's offense is changing. We're gonna run a pro offense. It's gonna look like every college offense that we've ever run. It's the spread. I've worked with so and so. I've done this before. Look who I did with that before. Look who this turned into. I think you look like this player. That's all recruiting is. You're just hyping things up and taking the positives out of things.
Huh.
Yeah, you can do that with anybody.
You know what everybody's got to stop doing? Looking for ex-Ducks or locals. That has nothing to do with anything.
It does to aggravate you a little bit.
Well, it's just you're just throwing out names. And like somebody just texted Chris Miller. And it's like, okay, because he went to Sheldon? Because he played? Because he was a great quarterback? You know, his coaching career, I think aside from 3 years in the NFL, he's got no high school, no college experience. None at all. And it says that he is current, and actually he's got a job. He's the current offensive coordinator for the Houston Roughnecks. I don't even know what league that is.
It's the CFL, Steve. Oh, no, the Houston Rex. That's the, wait.
That's the pending
was
league?
Was that the XFL or was that the Alliance of American Football
Club? No, it says current. It says 2020.
Hmm. Oh, that's XFL then.
Yeah, of the XFL. All right. So, yes. So, it's just, it's just, for some reason, you guys are just looking for connections to the community. Somebody just texted Jeff Tedford retired from Fresno State.
That's the joke, Steve. I think we need to lean
no,
into
No. A couple of these people are serious.
Oh. Well, maybe pretend they're joking and lean into the joke. No. I heard a guy mention Chip Kelly's coming back on Twitter. I think he said he's got a source of a friend who knows the guy within the athletic department. He's
now, if you want a sarcastic local connection, somebody mentioned Rick Adelman, the coach of the Blazers when they made the finals in 90 and 92. And somebody, why hasn't somebody suggested Joey Harrington?
Oh, wow. Joey going from TV, from not coaching for
from
forever.
From never coaching.
So, boom, offensive coordinator of the Ducks. Oh, that'd be incredible. Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. Everybody just stop. I'm not asking you. I'm not telling you. It is every bit your right to text these ridiculous suggestions. But please, if I said pretty please, would that help? Less miles. All right.
You did pretty decent at Kansas.
For about an hour. Reality, if you notice the end of the season, reality came tumbling down.
Oh, well, yeah. He's still playing with some really bad Kansas guys, but they did okay. And doing okay at Kansas for football is kind of a big deal.
I'm not even granting you okay.
Oh, okay is fine. For Kansas football, you
No, went... I would say I would give you okay
That's
if
what
it
I'm
turned
saying.
Out okay.
It turned
it
out okay.
It did not turn out
it
okay.
It was okay.
They had one win.
The other team in Kansas beat Oklahoma. That's got to be a big boost for Kansas, right?
They
Kansas
beat
State
Texas
did something.
Tech.
That's pretty, yeah.
And that was their only Big 12 win. They lost their last game 66-6.
Didn't they go 0 for the conference the year before, too? Like,
they beat Indiana State. It didn't go well. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. One more call before break. Let's get to Ken. Ken, good afternoon. How's it going?
Okay, Steve. So how long have you been in this market? I mean, it's been quite a few years, right?
I landed here in time for the 1990 football season, Bill Musgrave's senior year.
Okay, so you've been around the block a few times, and, I mean, shouldn't we understand and know that reasonable expectations out of our fan base for things just doesn't apply? I mean, I love the coaching carousel because anytime something opens up, everyone just is taking shots at the barrel. Like, hey, let's bring Mark Helfrich back, or, hey, Willie Taggart's not coaching. And I just love how people start throwing out there anybody and everybody who's ever picked up a clipboard and saying, they would be a good coach. I mean,
right.
Good grief.
Yeah, it's basically throw darts at a board and hope for the best.
Yeah. Hey, but whoever they get, looking forward to it and looking forward to the bowl game and seeing how the Ducks finish out the year. But someone's getting the reins of an awesome unit, so I'm excited for whoever they get.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Ken. Like I said, my guess is the man who will fill this job is someone that's not even remotely on your radar. Probably a guy that Cristobal has been aware of, because I don't think something like this happens just randomly. I mean, Arroyo and Cristobal work together. One guy's one's boss. They're, you know, comrades in arms. And if the head coach is aware that his coordinator wants to become a head coach, then you can darn well bet, probably in his desk somewhere on a legal pad, he's got a list of names of who would intrigue him if they were available to be his coordinator if his guy landed a head coaching job, which I would imagine wouldn't be a secret. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll have an update and more sports talk. 95.3, The Score.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
If everyone's doing it right, but the Patriots are the ones getting caught constantly, what does that mean? Because the Patriots are better at everything than everyone. What that means, I tell you like yesterday, it's the Roach Principle. If you see one, there are 100 behind the walls. The reason that the Patriots, I think, get caught is because they're doing it more than anyone. It's not that they're sloppy or they're bad at it or they're arrogant. It's they're doing it so much they sometimes get caught.
Giddy up, let's go.
I love that, by the way. Max Kellerman's like, yeah, they're getting caught. Just like, that's why, because they're cheating. Gotta hate them. And I never did until just now. It's just like, all right, Spygate was like, what are you really doing? Is that really the reason you're winning all these titles and Super Bowls and AFC? And then Deflategate is like, the whole... Everybody's doing it. Well, then why is only one team getting caught? I'm not a believer in every politician is corrupt. Every baseball player was using PEDs. That's just cheap. And it makes the low-life scumbag cheaters. It allows them off the hook without justification. So screw them. All right, 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you feel like jumping on in, which we're going to do right now... let's bring in James. James, how's it going?
Good, Steve. What's going on?
All right. All is good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So I've heard some conversation today about not only, you know, Arroyo leaving, but the fact that he might pull some assistants with him. And I was just wanting to get your take on that. I find it hard to believe that I don't care what your role is at Oregon, that you're going to get lured for less money. And they're not going to pay, you know, the assistants at UNLV like they pay the assistants at Oregon to go to UNLV with Marcus Arroyo. I don't know if you guys have talked about that at all today, but was just wanting to get your take on that.
So, wait, run that by me again.
I've heard several people talking about
all right,
Arroyo.
Bringing other assistants.
Yes, he might be taking some people with him. And I'm just finding it hard to believe what assistant at Oregon would want to leave to go be an assistant at UNLV. To me, that seems like a down step. I mean, okay, maybe if you were like a quarterbacks coach or...
Yeah, unless it's a promotion and more money, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but still, even though, what if you're ex-assistant at Oregon? Are you going to be making and have that much... I mean, let's say... Something doesn't work out with, let's say, the defensive coordinator gets taken, you know, next year, our coordinator. And if you stay at Oregon, you might have opportunities with ever, I mean, it's always going to, I mean, there's stuff changes all the time. So to me, it just seems like you'd hold out at Oregon, just kind of waiting to see if maybe you might get you know, a big coordinator job at Oregon, or wait for a better job to open, because UNLV seems like a crappy job.
Well, but historically, it's been a failure of a program. And, you know, he's not taking, you know, Avalos with him. I mean, the only way I would see somebody leaving is if his receivers coach or his running back coach would go with him and become a coordinator. Like I said, if it's not a promotion, nobody's leaving to become the linebacker coach from Oregon to UNLV.
Well, right. But how much of a promotion is just a step up?
Well, it's the next step in the process. If you're a position coach, then you become a coordinator, and then if you want to become a head coach, it depends what you want.
Right, I hear you. And I wasn't meaning Andy. I was just saying, I've heard some people say, well, if they hung around, and you know, Andy is going to be sought after as a head coach here probably pretty soon, and then he ends up going, then somebody could step in. You know,
no, I see what you mean.
That's all I'm saying. So just, I don't know. Just wanted to get your take on that.
All right. Thanks a lot. Yeah, no, and you know, no, with all the names being bandied about, has anybody considered that Cristobal might be comfortable with Mirabal or Mastro or Bo Knight or one of his position coaches being bumped in a similar manner to Scott Frost? Man, you know, it's all hearsay at this point. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, hit us up via the text line as well, 321-0824. You know, as far as the Pac-12 in general, there's been a lot of talk around the country about, you know, once again, you know, in 2014, Oregon, 2015, none, 2016, Washington. Now, 17, 18, 19, not being a part of the college football playoff. And a buddy of mine alerted me to an article by Pete Thamel of Yahoo, who, you know, the Pac-12 conference with its lagging revenue, get this, intermittently blindfolded officials and star-crossed flagship programs continued a searing streak of infamy Friday night, and said the Pac-12 title game continued the dueling droughts that defines the league. Wow. And it's like weebles wobble and everybody falls down. So I guess I don't
Tannenism.
Think about it that often. So the last Pac-10/12 team to win all the marbles was USC in 2004. You know, you've had a Pac-12 team play for it in 05. You've had Oregon in 10 and 14. And so that national title drought is the longest of any Power 5 league. But if memory serves correctly, it's by what? A year? The reason I bring that up is you had 2005 when Texas won. That was the last Big 12 team to win. You know, obviously Clemson's won it out of the ACC, so has Florida State since then. In the SEC, obviously, you know, since then you've had Florida win it a couple times. You've had LSU win it in 2007.
Alabama
obviously a million
Auburn.
Times. Auburn 2010. In the Big Ten, it's just been Ohio State. So when they say about the drought, it's like, I get it, but it's not like the other programs outside of the ACC and the SEC. I mean, the Big Ten's won one, and the Big 12 won one ever since then as well. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Rob. Rob, good afternoon. How's it going?
Doing good. Thanks, Steve. Well, I have it on good authority from my wife's brother's housekeeper. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know why all our fans that these coaches owe us something. Like, he's got a chance to, you know, move up the ladder and, you know, from from the UNLV, then maybe he gets, you know, his next gig. I just don't understand. We expect this fealty from these coordinators that did they sign in blood? I don't get it.
Yeah, I haven't really heard many fans kind of bitter about Arroyo leaving. It's just they're wondering now who's going to step in. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously Taggart, that was a different story. You know, his whole, oh, I'm here, I'm committed to the community, peace, I'm gone. So we were talking at work today, and it is a little ironic that, you know, rewind 2 years ago, we're bringing in Willie Taggart. Fast forward 2 years, Cristobal's playing in the Rose Bowl, and Willie doesn't have a job.
Right.
So somehow I feel a little karma in there somewhere.
Right. Well,
that's all I got.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rob. Yeah, I don't sense that there's this disdain or any begrudging of Arroyo leaving to take a head coaching job. I mean, why would you? And certainly, you know, there was a period with from Coach Aliotti and Osborne and Gary Campbell and, well, you know, Don Pelham, where there was such continuity within the staff that it did seem like there was this kind of commitment to the program. But, yeah, I was just going from Texas. So USC, Pac-10, Texas, Big 12, 05. Since then, it's been Florida, LSU, Florida, Alabama, Auburn, Alabama, Alabama. So that was SEC all the way through. We all the way home. Then Florida State out of the ACC, then Ohio State out of the Big Ten, and then it's been nothing but Alabama and Clemson since. So the whole not winning it for that long mathematically is accurate, but no, the bottom line is Ohio State played Oregon out of the Pac-12 then for the national championship. That's the only time they've been in it this decade. I mean, the last team, Ohio State lost a couple of national championship games in the mid-2000s to Florida for sure. But, I see where he's going with that, and it's statistically accurate, but I don't know that anybody outside of the ACC or SEC should be chirping about the success of their program, because outside of Ohio State, nobody else has made it from the Big Ten, right? Michigan's never made it. Wisconsin's never made it. Penn State's never made it to the playoff. So I don't think it's as... Now, if you want to cite Larry Scott and revenue and the Pac-12 network getting not maxing out the coverage and certainly the ineptitude of the officials, hey, I'm there for you. But otherwise, the on-field, it's been the SEC, Clemson, and Florida State in the ACC, and then three conferences that are really striving to become a regular in the national championship picture.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to praise the SEC for dominating and running the last decade plus and then be like, lol, look at all these guys not winning titles. Like, well, yeah, they go hand in hand. Like, what? Of course, like, one conference making a run is going to make another conference look really bad. And if it just so happens that, you know, the one other conference that's sending a couple extra teams keep running into the SEC team, yeah, they're going to lose. That's kind of what happened. Like, it's not really a hot take. You're just kind of citing a fact. Like, what's the point of that? Wow, the SEC had a great time. Let's make fun of the Pac-10 and Pac-12 for not winning anything.
Yeah, it just seems there are more accurate targets, maybe. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll have the tweet of the day and wrap up a Wednesday next. 95.3, The Score.
And now... It's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hi, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostbrewed Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. I was involved in a very good Twitter thread today with at Mount Booble and intern Sam, and talking about if it would actually be possible to throw for 40,000 yards in a season on NCAA Football 14. Which I said, look, if you can just throw for 3,000 yards in one game, that's an accomplishment. Apparently, they think they can do it. They would need time.
People have problems.
They've got strategies. You take every kickoff. You run it out at the 2 or the 1 yard line. You try and just, you're throwing streaks. You've got button hooks involved in things. And I don't know. Intern Sam and Mount Boo will think they can do it. And then it all ended with me saying, would you rather run hot routes or wheel routes every player, end up watching cats? And it's gotten out of hand.
All roads lead to cats.
Yes, it does. But I'm amazed that they think they can do it, because I don't think they can do it. 3,000 yards in one game? One game of football. Even a video game. That's impossible. It's impossible.
It's stupid talk. Ugh.
This is from a couple of days ago, but I just saw it today, so I thought I would at least nominate it. From Alex Kirshner, teams that went undefeated in the SEC in 2019. LSU, expected. Memphis, BYU, Purdue, Georgia State, Wyoming, San Jose State, and Western Kentucky. What a phenomenal list of teams. That's just incredible. But our tweet of the day is from Will Brinson. It is from very early this morning, and it does qualify, but it's about the Garrett Cole news. At Will Brinson on Twitter, woke up this morning smiling at the idea of Garrett Cole sitting up there on May 1st, no hair, no beard, a 4.8 ERA, and Yankees fans booing him off the mound. It's gonna happen. He's gonna throw a ball for the first pitch of the season for the Yankees, and they're gonna boo him. $300 million to this guy.
Yeah, there's some people on Twitter getting a little carried away about where this might go. I forgot who one of the Will Brinson of CBS.
I just read his tweet for tweet of the day.
It's so ridiculous, because what is it based on?
It's a joke. It's just a joke, but it's just the fact that Yankees fans' expectations are that has a 0 ERA with 3 strikeouts every inning that he pitches, and that's the standard. And if he throws a couple balls here and there, they're going to boom. It's a funny joke. Just move on. Thanks to at Will Brinson for the refreshing tweet of the day. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at 953 The Score. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk 953. Don't be a jerk. Just do it.
All right, if you insist, Will Brinson, I'll bend him into tiny little squares.
That's a funny little joke. And then you came back with, oh, he's never had an ERA over 4. Please, he's going to have a couple bad starts early, and Yankee fans are going to boo him. And
no,
he's not going to have
They booed
the hell out of Giancarlo Stanton like 3 games into his tenure.
He also
3 games in
for 97 with all 3 pitch strikeouts.
That was after game 3. There was 3 games in, they were booing him because he was striking out. They wanted him to hit 3 home runs in at bat. And anything less wouldn't work, and they're gonna have
to. I'm calling you on that.
What?
I say bull dinky.
That Yankee fans aren't gonna.
3 games in.
They were booing him like within the first series, the first couple of homestands. He wasn't even close to like the ground out machine, strikeout machine that he is now, and where everybody hates him. It was a couple games in. They thought he was a failure.
What makes you think they're gonna When was the last time Cole gave anybody a reason to boo him? So you actually think he's going to be bad all of a sudden?
No, I'm just saying it's a possibility, and it's just a funny little joke.
I disagree. I take complete exception. His attempt at sarcasm was completely from the Midwest. It missed the point.
You're no fun.
I'm the king of fun, if it requires it. All right. So we sit here now, looking ahead at a Thursday, and one college football game this weekend. And that would be Army-Navy from the Link in Philly. And then next week, bowl week starts. Jeez, that just sounds nuts. And tomorrow night, week 15 of the NFL season begins with the Jets at the Ravens. Baltimore is a 16-point home favorite, and the over-under on that is 45.5. Did you see what happened in that stupid Jet game last week, by the way?
No.
They set a record, both teams, Jets and the Fish. 10 field goals. The Jets won 22-21. You'd see that game, and what would you assume of the Dolphins?
3 touchdowns.
Right. Nope, no touchdowns. They
that game was featured on the Red Zone channel more frequently than the Falcons-Panthers game. They cut to Jets. I mean, it was a horrible game. They cut to Jets-Dolphins because Ryan Fitzpatrick was taking a snap inside the five, and they're just like, we don't know. This could be an incredible touchdown. This could be a safety. This could just be an incomplete pass. We're going to stay here in case something weird happens. That was at like 10:20. The first time you saw anything from the Falcons-Panthers game was at 10:30 because somebody was kicking a field goal from the 35. They hadn't even gotten into the red zone at that point yet. You are a half hour into the day.
In the here's the scoring after the second quarter. So Darnold hit Demaryius Thomas for a touchdown. So Miami had 7 field goal drives, 67 yards, 65, 62, 45, 36, and the game winner 56. After the touchdown and with 2 minutes to go in the half, Jason Sanders field goal, Jason Sanders field goal, Jason Sanders field goal, Jason Sanders field goal, Sam Ficken field goal, Jason Sanders field goal, Sam Ficken field goal. At the buzzer, they win it 22-21. Everybody go home. 10 field goals is a record. 7 field goals by one team was a Dolphins record. And nobody cared because it was the Jets and Dolphins. And by the way, how about the stupid Jets being 5-8 and wrecking any chance they have of getting... are we assuming it's going to be the dude from Ohio State that's the number one pick?
No, Joe Burrow's going number one to Cincinnati.
I'm not 100% sure.
It's a lock.
All right. Well, maybe Cincinnati, because Cincinnati. All right. Have a good one. Catch up with you tomorrow. Crunch Time Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score.